Time to bring in our man, Bill Shanks. Bill is the host of the Bill Shanks Show weekdays. You can catch it on 93.1 FM in Macon and 98.3 FM in Warner Robins and South Central Georgia. Bill, thank you so much for joining us.
Merry Christmas. How are you guys?
Same to you. How was your Christmas?
Very good. Very, very good. Very went quick and ready to rock and roll back for a couple days and have a couple more days off and then get ready for 2019.
Exactly. And one thing about 2019 that I think a lot of people are expecting is that hot stove to crank back up when we do turn over into the new year. It's been crazy because you look at the free agents and a lot of the pieces that teams have made available on the trade block or even, like I said a second ago, via free agency this season. And we've seen some guys, you know, make moves and some teams make moves, but it seems like with the gravity of some of these names, this has been a very weirdly quiet offseason so far.
Well, I think it has, but I think we're just seeing a trend where more and more activity is going to be going on in January and February. We saw that last year, and everybody was wondering what was going on. We had a pretty quick start to the year off season this year, and then people were like, well, it's not going to be like last year, and now it's kind of slowed down. I mean, there's still been a lot of trades and a good number of free agents that have been signed. I mean, I have a sheet here that I keep on Microsoft Word of all the activity, and it is still pretty lengthy. I mean, there are let's see, two pages of trades and a page and a sixth of free agent signings. So, and I don't even know if I've updated it in the last couple of days, but I mean, there's still been some activity, but I think it's still been overall a little slower than expected. That's why you had some talk at the winter meetings about a possible trade deadline in the offseason, which they actually used to have when I was a little boy. I remember that there was a trade deadline after the winter meetings. You had to get your trades done by the end of the winter meetings. So I don't know if they'll revisit that or not. That really wasn't responded to very positively after Dave Dombrowski made some comments about that, because I think they feel like if they have the entire offseason, they have somewhat of a storyline and are in the news cycle the whole time. So, but it's slower, and you know, I thought a lot about the situation with the Braves, though, as far as Alex Anthopoulos being patient, and I appreciate his patience. I think I'd rather have a overly patient general manager compared to an overly anxious and overly active GM at this point, because he's still trying to see which players in this farm system that has been so heralded are worth keeping, and it may be a sign that he believes these kids are worth holding on to, and if that's the case, we have to be patient along with him and trust that he'll get some deals done here in the next 2 months before they go to spring training, which, believe it or not, spring training will be about 6 weeks from now.
Bill, I'm not going to suggest anything as heavy as collusion, and that's a pretty that word has a lot of gravity when it comes to the world of sports. But could there be something here where maybe some of the owners are, you know, they've had these meetings or whatever, maybe they're getting together and say, let's, maybe kind of hold off on these kind of ridiculous huge contracts like we're hearing rumored for guys like Bryce Harper and Manny Machado?
You know, it's been interesting because the Braves have obviously said they are, by their actions, that they are not interested in long-term contracts. They're not interested. I mean, heck, they've been hesitant to give out a three-year contract. So it's that. Where is that strategy coming from? I don't know. But then you look around, and it's like, well, no one has jumped on Bryce Harper with a 10-year contract. Somebody called up right now and offered Bryce Harper a 10-year contract. They probably have the press conference tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And that's not happening. So is this a market correction where they're seeing these deals where they're just not working out, and they're seeing Giancarlo Stanton being given this huge contract by the Marlins and 2 years later being traded for nothing just to get the money off the books? I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. I think it is, if it was just the Braves, I'd say, well, you know, they're just trying to either be cheap or they're being careful. But this is the whole game. This is the whole sport. And, you know, Craig Kimbrel can't get the 6-year contract with the average salary that he would like to have as one of the best closers in the game, and that's, I'm sure, troubling to him. So it is a question of whether or not some, if it's quote-unquote collusion or it's simply a market correction to where these owners and these general managers have decided it's just not smart to give these outrageous contracts. And, you know, you look at the Jason Hayward deal. That was stupid. There's nothing smart about that. You look at some of the other big signings that have happened, and especially as these teams really carefully evaluate evaluate the value of each player in a very specific way now with the statistics and the analytics that they have, it makes you wonder if they just feel like giving a 10-year contract even to a superstar is not worth it.
Bill, as we're entering the era where I think some fans are getting a little restless, I don't know if that's the right word or not, but we want something to happen, the Braves to sign somebody. I think we all sort of agree starting pitching should be the forefront, but who are some names that we may be needing to pay more attention to that might be a real possibility for the Braves to go after very soon?
Well, the main players that are out there as far as the rotation pieces are Corey Kluber, Trevor Bauer from the Indians. I think Zach Greinke from the Diamondbacks has a very good chance of being moved. I mean, those are going to be very big deals, either in money or in prospects. Greinke has an outrageous amount of money left on his deal, $34 million per year for, 3 years, I believe it is. So it's going to be very difficult for the Braves to take on that money unless there is a huge financial windfall or something that happens where they're not stuck with that money. You know, there may be some other pitchers out there that we're not thinking about that could be available that might be moved. But I mean, even some of these free agent pitchers have not really changed hands, like the Dallas Keuchels that are out there that people still are kind of curious about. So, I mean, look, I would love Corey Kluber. I would give up. I love the Braves prospects, but I think Corey Kluber is a pitcher who would be worth giving up a large package for. Braves don't seem interested in doing that, at least not yet. And I would love Greinke. I just don't think the finances are going to allow them to participate in that situation. So I don't know what they're going to do with the rotation. I just think that if they don't go into the season with another veteran starting pitcher like Kluber or Greinke, that someone of that ilk, they're going to have to really rely on Tiki Toussaint, Kyle Wright, Max Fried, pitchers like that to really take a step up and have one of them become a star. Mike Soroka, obviously, in that group as well. You're going to have Newcomb go to the next level. You're going to have to Gausman really realize his full potential for the long term for this season and keep Folty where he was last year. There's a lot of gambles in that compared to having someone at the top of that rotation where everything can kind of flow down from there. So we'll see what they do, and we'll see what they can come up with. I mean, I'm sure there are names out there, pitchers who we're not thinking about who might be available, but are they going to be worthwhile? I mean, I don't think it's worth getting a 3 or 4 starter for this team. Why do that when you may have plenty of 3 or 4 starters already here? And, of course, we still have Julio Teheran on this roster, so that's still a part of the equation. But if you're not going to get a number one pitcher or even a great number two pitcher, just don't do anything. And I think that's what they're dealing with here.
Bill, a name that was noticeably absent from those pitching names you threw out there in terms of guys that are available is Dallas Keuchel. Is that just because you don't want the Braves to go after him, or you don't think they are in that market, or is it just that you don't value him as highly as some people do?
No, I mentioned him as a free agent who's still available, Sam. He is still out there. I do not think that the Braves are going to be involved in him. I don't. I think his money demands are going to be too high, and I don't want him, to be honest with you. I think he's going to get a bloated contract, and he's going to, at the end of that 4-year deal, look back and you're going to say, was that really worth $70, $80 million? So I don't think they're going to go down that road.
One guy that I was a little surprised, and you know, I think that we saw when the Braves went out and got Brian McCann that they were going for more stopgap measure at catcher as opposed to long term, but It seemed like their interest, or at least they would be interested in JT Realmuto, and he still hasn't, you know, made that move yet. So I know that that one's a trade and not a contract for a free agent. But, again, another name that has been slow to be moved. And I know that the Marlins are asking for a lot, and we talked about this last week with them probably asking for Ozzie Albies or at least one of the Braves' marquee players. So do you think that ultimately it's just the fact that the Marlins are asking for too much and that they're going to have to come down from their valuation of him?
Yeah, I do. And I don't think the Braves are going to be involved. I'm glad. I don't really. I like JT Realmuto. I know a lot of people, the Braves, they like him a lot. But I don't think he's worth the price that you'd have to give up, which would be a significant package in return. And if he's the best catcher in baseball, I think the catching talent's really dipped compared to what it has been in the past with players like, you know, Mike Piazza and Pudge Rodriguez and Johnny Bench and Tony Pena and people like that in the past in my lifetime. So, you know, I think he's a very good player, but I think the Braves are better off going with McCann and Flowers now, seeing where William Contreras, the kid that'll probably be in Double-A this year, is after this season, and then take that next step for what they're going to do for the long term for the next decade. So I'm glad that they had a high price on Realmuto, and the Braves were not interested in giving up the amount that they were really going to have to get him.
What do you think the market is for Nick Markakis?
I don't think it's there, to be honest with you. I don't think he's got much of a market. Heck, if Bryce Harper can't be moved or can't be signed so far, you know Nick Markakis is struggling to find one. I mean, you look at the people who are available as far as the free agent outfielders are concerned. AJ Pollock's still out there, Adam Jones still out there, Carlos Gonzalez, of course, Harper at the top of the list. And then Markakis. You're talking about Markakis being fifth or so down the line. And would a team rather have him for a year or two than sign one of these other guys for big money? I don't know, maybe. I like Markakis. I hope he doesn't come back to Atlanta. I just think they can do better than him. And unless it was a one-year contract, which, I mean, if I was him, I would want something more than a one-year contract after the year that he just had. I don't blame him for wanting that, but he's in his mid-30s, and it's just a really scary thing. And Markakis is a different bird, and that Markakis does have a desire to get 3,000 hits, and he is a very durable player who does not miss many games, so there's that to keep you kind of interested in him, that he's not going to break down, you don't think, because he takes care of himself and does not get hurt. But he's 35, and as people who get in their mid-30s know, it's harder to get up in the morning than it was in your mid-20s. So, you know, we'll see what happens with him. But I wish Atlanta would just find someone with more power.
Bill, switching gears a little bit, because we are now we're inside game week for the Sugar Bowl. And with that, I'm seeing the conversation come up more and more about, will Georgia be motivated to play this game? Will they be out there wanting to win after the disappointment of the SEC championship game? Is there anything that indicates to you that Kirby Smart will not have Georgia fired up and ready to play in what is still a very prestigious bowl game?
No, I don't worry about that at all, to be obvious, to be honest with you, Logan. I just feel like this is a different coach here. We don't have to worry about this team getting up for any type of game, much less the Sugar Bowl. I mean, to me, the best thing that could happen for Georgia to get them even more fired up to make Texas even more in trouble is for Alabama and Clemson to go out there and beat the crap out of Oklahoma and Notre Dame on Saturday, and to show that maybe those two teams, Oklahoma and Notre Dame, didn't belong in this Final Four. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I don't really expect it to happen. But I think either way, Georgia's going to have plenty of motivation after what happened to them in Atlanta on December the 1st to go out there and to really show that they're one of the best teams in the country, regardless of what happens to the polls, and to springboard that. And those players who are set and are coming back next year, forget about the ones who are leaving, who obviously want to go out as a Sugar Bowl champion, but those that are coming back next year, they know what's happening to this program now. They know the momentum. They know the routine. They know the process that's in place to win all the time. And I don't worry about them not showing up or not being ready. They're led by a quarterback who has been driven since the moment he got in his first game in the beginning of the 2017 season to succeed, and that's helped them a great deal. And so, no, I think they're going to be ready to rock and roll and ready to play and enjoy one more game with this year's team, and then let that springboard into a good off season. And I think that's the mindset now.
Bill, there's a couple of ways I could have ended this interview, but because it's only a few days after Christmas, we're getting ready for the new year, we're still in the holiday spirit, I won't bring things down by asking you about the stupid Falcons and their stupid winning streak to end this stupid season. I will ask you what you thought about the end of the Paul Johnson era yesterday, as those players really looked like they were fighting hard for their guy.
Well, I was sitting here before you guys called doing some research on Paul Johnson for my show this afternoon, and I've always liked Paul Johnson. Paul Johnson's always been very good to come on my show when he comes to Macon for the Touchdown Club, which has been every year. And I think he's a good guy. I think he's a jerk, which I don't mind a football coach being a jerk, but I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he's just got a real prickly personality. But you know what? He wasn't very good. It's amazing, and I actually saw a friend of mine last night on Facebook, who's a Georgia Tech fan, who said something about, kind of like in essence, ding dong, the witch is dead, let him go, move on. And some people on there were like, oh, I'm going to miss him, and oh, I'm sad to see him go. And I text my friend. I didn't get on Facebook because I didn't want to get involved in the conversation. I didn't want to dumb down to get involved in that conversation, but I text my friend and I said, what the heck am I missing here? A couple weeks ago, before he left, or right when he did leave, brother, I had some numbers because people, including my co-host, to be honest with you, who was like, well, this is the best coach Georgia's had since Bobby Dodd. And I'm like, what are y'all talking about? And I have the stats and the win-loss record for Bobby Ross and George O'Leary. And I'm like, is what Paul Johnson did better than those two guys? And they want to talk about the Sugar Bowl they won over the Orange Bowl they won over Mississippi State back in 2015 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Since then, they're 24-25. And, I mean, they had their biggest win in 2015 when they shocked FSU, which was a top 10 team. They were ranked number 9.
Yeah, Bill was on the field. You took the that little video of that return, right?
Yeah, I was on the field. It was a great win. It was a cool game to be at, I admit that. And they turned around and lost 4 in a row. they were 51-37 in ACC play. They were 82-61 in his 11 years there. 7-6 this season. 3-6 in the bowl games. They had 3 years when they were in the top 25. They had 4 years out of 11 when they had 9 or more wins. They were 12-24 against top 25 ranked teams. They were, I was literally counting this up when y'all were introducing me. They were 3, 4, 5. They had 5 wins against top 10 teams, against 5, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 5-12 against top 10 ranked teams. Why would anybody who likes that program be upset that he is leaving? And I don't want to hear the bull crap and the subsequent blame that Georgia gets for them not being able to be more competitive on the football field, which I hear all the time, and I shoot it down pretty quickly because usually those people for Tech who say that don't know what the heck they're talking about. You're telling me in the most talented state, in my opinion, in this country, where a Kennesaw State and a Georgia Southern and other smaller teams can do really well with leftovers of high school players in this state who aren't even in the top 50 or 100 ranked for state of Georgia players, that Georgia Tech can't do better than that regardless of what the hell their curriculum says? Huh? So, you know what? Jeff Collins doesn't have a long way to go to be better than what the heck just left. And again, I like Paul Johnson, but the numbers show the proof.
I did want to ask you quickly here, Bill, just the five-year forecast, Jeff Collins, media seems to like him. Give us what you think Georgia Tech will be 5 years from today.
You know what? I think they'll be better than what they've been, Logan, because I think they'll focus on defense. Here's something else for you I was looking up. In the 11 years that Paul Johnson was the head coach, Georgia Tech's defense averaged in the ACC scoring defense rankings 7.5. So they were right in the middle every year when it comes to defensive scoring defense. Their best season scoring defense was his first year, 20.3 points per game allowed. That was sixth best in the conference. They never had anything better than 20.3 with their scoring defense. They were always between 20 and 30, so they never had an unbelievably bad year. But they were never good. They talked all early in the year about how much better Nate Woody was this year compared to Ted Roof. They were better last year with scoring defense than this year. So Jeff Collins is a defensive coach. I think defense wins championships. I think, therefore, and maybe they won't win a championship, I think they'll be better because they'll be a defensive team. And all the highlight and the spotlight on Paul Johnson's offense, what did it give them? Not much.
And, Bill, I'm with you on the whole academic side of things, because every school, regardless of their academic restriction, has a management major or the quote-unquote football major. I mean, Stanford is out here, a few years ago, almost competing for national championships or winning Pac-12. So, again, I think that is well overblown.
I had another friend of mine who's a Georgia Tech fan, a very big supporter for Georgia Tech, and I called him up when all this crap was going on and people were starting to go down that road again. Because, seriously, and obviously, I don't care wherever they're on, Atlanta or Athens or this show, but, I mean, every year they have a bad year, they start pointing to Georgia and blaming Georgia. Oh, my God, Georgia's got UGA supporters that are on the Board of Regents. They're keeping Georgia Tech from having the programs that they have. And my friend said, look, this is about I think he called it the Georgia Tech Senate. He said, this is not the president can't deal with this. The Board of Regents can't deal with this. The athletic director certainly can't deal with this. And the head coach can't deal with this. This is about people on the Georgia Tech Senate who run that institution, basically, academically, who say they do not want to, in their minds, lessen the reputation of their academics at Georgia Tech by allowing additional programs to be offered to athletes that would allow their football program to be better. Now, they have business degrees at Georgia Tech. Everybody doesn't have to be an engineer to go to Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm. It is harder for them to get in athletes because they don't have certain programs that could be really beneficial to them. But it's the academic people who do it. And here's what's crazy. This supposedly, I read more about this after I was told this. This happened after George O'Leary, in his last year at Georgia Tech, got in trouble. He got in trouble because there were some issues with how the academic portion, the academic part of their football program, the tutors, the people who were supposed to be helping the players, had cheated. It was the academic part of the athletic program that had gotten the athletic program in trouble, and yet the academic part of the institution is punishing the football program by not allowing more programs to be allowed. Do you think I have any solace or sorrow for what the heck's happening at Georgia Tech by them being a 7-5 program because of that going on? Not one damn bit. That's their own fault.
Yeah, and we'll take it as long as they want to keep acting like that, because it's certainly been good for the Dogs. All right, Bill, thank you so much, and you have a happy new year. And I know I won't be seeing you in New Orleans, but looking forward to talking to you again in 2019.
All right, sounds good, Sam. Thank you.
Bill Shanks, the one and only. You can catch his stuff on the old Bill Shanks Show, Monday through Friday, down in Macon, 93.1 FM, and in Warner Robins, 98.3 FM, again, for the Bill Shanks Show.